Mason, and joining us in studio is Scott Cleveland. He is running for Congressional District 2 in the Republican primary, and if the name sounds familiar, he actually ran against Senator Mike Crapo a couple of years ago, and he's taken another stab at a congressional run, and we're pleased to have him joining us this morning. Scott Cleveland, welcome.
Hey, it's great to be here and kick things off in beautiful Bonneville County, in tropical Bonneville County this morning.
It has... Okay, Julie and I have already had a little back and forth about the warm weather that
had. So it's a dry heat.
yes, I guess so. Well, Scott, introduce yourself to our audience. And did we interview you when you ran for Crapo?
We did a radio interview. Yeah, I did a sneak attack. I just called in one day, and you guys were gracious enough to put me on. It was fine. We were on the move. But a little bit about my background. I've been married to my lovely wife, Kathy, for 35 years. We're originally from New Mexico, and we moved to the Treasure Valley area in 2006. So we didn't just fly in. We've been there for a while. I'm a successful business owner. I have an investment advisory firm that's called 4C Financial Group. It's an eagle. But my wife, Kathy, and I, we live in Garden City, the GC, we call it. It sounds better when you call it the GC.
Okay.
Garden City, which is between Boise and Eagle. And I joke with people, you know, when you tell people in East Idaho that you're from Ada County, you know, they roll their eyes. You can actually see them roll their eyes and say, oh, the great state of Ada. And I say, well, now hold on a minute. I'm from the good half of Ada County.
Gotcha.
And then they usually say, wait a minute, which half is the good half of Ada County? And I say, the half that doesn't have Boise in it.
Okay.
That's the conservative half.
Gotcha.
Well, explain that congressional map to our listeners, because they're probably thinking, why in Garden City is he running for a
CD
seat?
Too, right.
So explain that one to our listeners.
Well, the map's a little funny. So, you know, the congressional district, unlike a senator seat that covers the whole state, the congressional district is based on population, and they divide it half and half. And so the eastern half, of course, is out here, but it comes all the way up to a little point up in the Treasure Valley, follows the Boise River, and the cutoff is about Highway 55 and most of Eagle Road. And so I didn't draw the boundary. I just happened to live in District 2 as much as anybody else. And a lot of people aren't aware of that when you know, they think of Russ Fulcher, because he takes up most of Eagle Star, Middleton, Nampa, you know, Canyon County, and so on. But I'm happy to be a part of District 2, and I'm looking forward to running for the seat.
So, I mean, you did run against Crapo a couple years ago, and now you're running against Congressman Mike Simpson. What prompted you to say, I want to jump into this frying pan and go for this? Like, what is it that led you to that?
Well, it's much the same reason that I ran against Senator Crapo. If you look at what's going on in our nation's capital, the place is a mess. And the people that are leading this country are doing a lousy job, for lack of a better word. They're doing a lousy job at running the country. They're not good at running the country. And that hasn't changed. In fact, it's gotten worse in the last 2 years. And while I came up short against Senator Crapo, I decided, okay, I'm looking at the race here. And my wife was, well, maybe we ought to sit this one out. And I'm looking, is there a good, strong Republican challenger to Mike Simpson this time around? And there wasn't. And if you look at the trend, you know, a lot of people say it's difficult or impossible to beat an incumbent as well entrenched as Mike Simpson. That's not a fact. He's not invincible, and here's why. Just 3 cycles ago, he was unchallenged and received 100% of the vote in 2018 with 72,000 votes. Fast forward 2 years later in 2020, he received 68,000 votes and only 72% of the primary vote.
Yeah.
Just 2 years ago, he ran again and received 67,000 votes, down to 54% of the primary total. So I don't have to move that needle very far, and as long as I don't have a bunch of Republican challengers that dilutes the challenger's vote share, it's very doable. And so far, there isn't really a challenger. There's one Republican challenger, and he's kind of a name-only guy. We have a chance to do it, and that's what we're going to do, and we're going to be working hard at it. And today is really the main kickoff.
All right. One of the things, and we actually had Congressman Simpson in a few weeks ago, and one of the things that he talks about in defense of his reelection and his position in Congress, because he's been there for a quarter of a century, he he would say, I'm on the Appropriations Committee. Right? We take care of the Idaho National Lab. We take care of Idaho because I make sure when we're doing budgets and continuing resolutions, I shepherd Idaho's interests into that. As a freshman member of Congress, you wouldn't have that clout. You wouldn't have that seniority. How would you respond to that? Because there are a lot of people at the Idaho National Lab that want to make sure those budgets stay intact.
Sure, sure. Well, I know quite a bit about the labs. My father retired from Sandia National Labs down in New Mexico, and my late father-in-law retired from the Department of Energy. So I know how important those institutions are, and they do need to be properly funded. When we get to the energy water discussion, I'll expand on that a little bit. But as far as him being on the Appropriations Committee, yes, it's important, but he's not the only person that can do that job. And I might also point out that maybe they've been appropriating a little bit too much money. Our country has a deficit of $34 trillion. When Mike Simpson took office in 1999, that number was $5.5 trillion. And so... Wow. He can brag about appropriating money and appropriating funds for Idaho, but he's also racked up the taxpayers' credit card to the tune of $34 trillion. That's a problem. We have to turn that around. Politicians are good at pointing out problems. You have to have solutions that go with those problems. And so we don't have a revenue problem in the United States of America. We have a spending problem, and we have to start dialing that back, turning the corner, bringing the deficit down. It's taken us 30 years to get in this mess. It's going to take us probably a decade or longer to get it back under control. And those are the things that I would be doing as a sitting member of Congress. So I get it. Yes, he brings home the pork, but it's on your credit card. Don't forget that when you go vote May 21st.
All right, so it's clear you think that there's a vast difference. You believe you're far more fiscally responsible than Congressman Simpson. Give me one more stark difference between the two of you.
Well, you know, I don't want to talk negative politics because I think people get tired of that. And there's no real reason to do that. But let me just put it this way. My opponent, Mike Simpson, if Mike Simpson were a pickup truck, he'd be a pickup truck with 400,000 miles on the odometer. Yep. That doesn't make him a bad truck. Mike Simpson has served for many years, not always perfect. We differ on a lot of policies. Some of his votes are completely opposite to the way that I would have voted. So, again, it doesn't make him a bad pickup truck, but he's not going to be in office 2 years from now or 4 years from now. He's at the end. And the question for the voters of Idaho is, do you want to wait till your pickup truck throws a rod or blows the transmission and you got to walk home? Or do you want to start shopping and getting a new one now? Now, I'm not brand new. I have a couple miles on my odometer. I'm broken in, I like to say.
Yeah.
But not 400,000. And there's no reason to make it personal. I have nothing personal against Mike Simpson. But like I said, he's doing some things that have angered the voters here. That's why his numbers are trending down. Probably the biggest issue that I hear from voters and constituents is his stance on the Lower Snake River dams, his water policy, his energy policy. That is a mess of his own making, and it's bad policy. And that alone is probably reason enough not to vote him back in for another term.
One question that I was planning on asking you, in fact, since we scheduled this, I wanted to ask you about the dam breaching issue, because I think that if we look at Congressman Simpson's political vulnerabilities, that may be the biggest one right now. I think he is completely crossways with his constituency when it comes to dam breaching, at least the vast majority of them.
Sure.
What's your position on that, and how would you respond to that?
Well, my position is, number one, the dams should absolutely not be breached on the Lower Snake River. There's four of them. They have a vital function, and that's just bad policy. So I would keep those dams, and not only would I keep those dams, I would look to either build some new ones. Well, hydroelectric energy is extremely efficient. Build some new ones, or at least raise the level of some of the current dams that we have in the state of Idaho. I'd also make a big shift towards nuclear energy. You know, nuclear energy could solve much of our nation's electricity needs, and we have the resources. We were just talking about the INL lab. That's right here in our backyard. Well, not only should we take advantage of their technology, but maybe even talk about building a power plant. We have what we need here. The technology has come such a long ways that is a safe and clean and efficient way to generate energy. And by doing so, maybe slowly over time, you could phase out, say, coal-burning power plants and so on, which we use in Idaho.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things. But I'd like to speak to the truth about what the water issue is. It's not just water issue for the ag industry, which is vital to Idaho, the dairy industry, the ag industry. But they make the issue about salmon. You know, he says, you know, the fish can't get up river, blah, 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 yada, yada. And I don't mind speaking the truth. That's more, I call it the salmon reparations. In my mind, Neil, that is nothing more than a shakedown by the tribes to get money. It's their victimhood is, oh, we need more money, and we're going to use the issue of these salmon just to shake down the taxpayers for more money. They're just another special interest group. And nobody's willing to say that, but I don't believe they really care about the salmon. I think they're just trying to squeeze more money out of the taxpayers for their constituency. And it has very little to do with water or energy, for that matter, other than they say, oh, this is all about the salmon. Well, I'm not buying that, and I don't think the voters should either.
So some would say, I want to play devil's advocate for
sure.
Just a moment, but I don't disagree with you. I think those kinds of politics happen all the mm-hmm. time. But what would you speak to the declining salmon numbers? I mean, right. The biologists have told us if we don't act, if we don't come up with a better way of saving the salmon, they could go extinct in a number of years. Your reaction to that concern?
Okay, well, you know, the salmon populations, year over year change quite a bit, quite dramatically. And there are lots of factors as to why the salmon population fluctuates. You start out in the Pacific Ocean. You deal with, you know, sea lions eating the things. They have been using fish ladders and fish trucks and fish farms for years and years. I don't personally believe that we need to harm the salmon deliberately, but they do. The fact is they do make it up here. I mean, they make the journey. They still do and always have. We've spent billions of dollars trying to mitigate that with some degree of success over time. I think we should continue the efforts to save them without breaching the dams.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right. I'm going to shift gears. Did you have another question about salmon?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're good. I'm going to shift gears. I think if you're here in East Idaho and you're going to ask mm-hmm. these constituents to vote for you, mm-hmm. they're going to want to know a little bit about your experience in politics. That doesn't mean you need 30 years of politics,
right. Sure.
But what have you done that
sure.
you can give as a reflection to the voters that you're going to do a good job as a congressman?
Sure. Well, I still am an active business owner, so I still have a full-time job doing that. But my entry into politics was predicated after the 2020 election. As a conservative, as a Republican, as a Trump supporter then and now, I saw the events of 2020. I didn't think that election was exactly on the up and up, and I'm not the only one in that camp. And I had many of my clients, friends, and family asking. They were frustrated. They asked, what can we do? My answer was, I don't know what we can do, but if we form a group and start meeting together, maybe we can come up with some action plans and take positive steps so that this doesn't happen again. So we formed this little group called the Treasure Valley Council of Patriots, TVCOP, Treasure Valley Council of Patriots. And that group started meeting in the lobby of my office every Tuesday night. And we still do. We meet every Tuesday night. We have for 3.5 years. My candidacy was born out of that. And, we made a strategic run against Senator Crapo. And while we were unsuccessful, things haven't changed. After that election, I got very, very involved in Ada County politics, which is, of course, the largest voting block in the state of Idaho. And it was a mess. It was being run by people that didn't have the best interests of their constituents in mind, much like what happens in Washington. So I got very involved, started volunteering, going to the meetings, and you guys probably heard the shift of what happened here in October. 6 of the 7 board members of the Ada County GOP resigned en masse about an hour before the meeting. Well, that wasn't a quick overnight thing that happened. It was a slow shift of power between the liberty and freedom-minded folks, the true conservatives of Ada County, versus people that were making really, really lousy decisions. And pretty soon that group was in the minority, and none of their policies or agendas were going to get passed. And so they decided to take their toys and go home and call it a day. And I say good riddance to them. At that point, I was then elected the third vice chairman to the Ada County GOP. And we're cleaning up the mess and moving forward.
So let's actually expand on that for mm-hmm. just a moment, because in recent years, we've seen the state Republican Party sue county parties. We've seen county parties suing the state party, and there is a massive rift in Idaho that you've had a front row seat to.
Sure.
It sounds like in Ada County. At some point, we got to figure out workable solutions and a way to move forward. That might mean a divorce at some point, or it might mean we find some common ground, we bury the hatchet, and find a way to move forward. What do you see as that solution? Because I think a lot of people on both sides are saying the current way of doing things is just not acceptable.
Well, I look at the rift within the party, and it happens not just in Idaho. It's happening nationally and, in fact, globally, if you really think about it. I don't see it as something to just agonize and lose sleep over, and here's why. It's a democratic process. So if we take the state GOP, the current chairwoman, Dorothy Moon, she was duly elected to her role.
Yeah.
She was elected by a body of over 700 delegates at the state convention almost 2 years ago. So it's not like somebody pulled a fast one and just slipped her in there. Same thing in Ada County. These people that chose to resign, they weren't fired. They weren't voted out. They just left, and I'm okay with that. I think that the bottom line in all of that is the people that are in power, they don't want to give up that power. You see it in Washington. You see it in our state government and in our state political parties. The establishment, the status quo, they're well entrenched. They control how things work in this state. They control the money, and from that, they gain so much power that any threat to that power is something to be quashed.
Yeah.
But the people that have moved to this state, I call them cows. These are good cows, by the way. Not that there's bad cows. Californians, Oregonians, Washingtonians, collectively known as cows, they are going to save the state of Idaho. They're already doing it from turning blue.
Yeah.
For every blue-haired leftist liberal that lands in Blaine County or the north end of Boise, there is five solid conservatives landing at the exact same moment somewhere else in Idaho. Eastern Idaho, Southern Idaho, North Idaho. It's never Northern Idaho, by the way. They'll correct you up there, by the way. it's okay, but that's what's going on. That's the heart of the matter. And these people, the Liberty Caucus, the Freedom Caucus people in Ada County, they are now the majority. And those people get active in politics right away because they don't want to see Idaho turn into the mess that they left on the West Coast or somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I don't see it as a problem. Now, should there be mudslinging and name-calling and some of this childish behavior? No, we don't have time for that. We need to advance the Republican Party, get more voters behind the conservative message, and get more true conservatives like myself elected to positions of power, whether it's Washington or the state of Idaho in some other capacity.
All right. We're talking with Scott Cleveland, Republican candidate for CD2. So we'll come back. And Scott, we're going to let you have the last word here in just a moment on News Talk 107.9.
Did you miss the Neil Larson Show? Catch every episode on the News Talk 107.9 app. Grab it anytime.
Available in your app store now.
All right, 8:57 on News Talk 107.9. Just about a minute left here in this hour, and we're talking with Scott Cleveland. He's running as a Republican for Congressional District 2 against the very longtime incumbent Mike Simpson. And Scott, you're actually going to be speaking this evening, the Stand Up for Idaho event at Shiloh Inn, the Snake River Event Center.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. It'll be my second time speaking. I spoke a couple years ago at that group and enjoyed it. Have a little bit of a following there. So if people want to hear a little bit more detail about my policy and get to know me, I'm happy to take questions from the crowd. And we'll do our thing there tonight at about 6:30 or so.
Okay.
And then we should be coming back out to this area about every 2 weeks. And we need volunteers. We need supporters. Our website, here's flash news break. Our website went live yesterday afternoon at about 3:15.
Okay.
We were in the Bronco headed this way in a hurry. And Kathy looks at her phone and says, hey, this, boom, it's up. It looks pretty good. So that's clevelandforcongress.org. Okay. .org, not .com. clevelandforcongress.org.
Is it Cleveland F-O-R or Cleveland the number 4?
It's F-O-R.
Cleveland F-O-R Congress. Cleveland for Congress. All right. Scott Cleveland, thank you so much. I'm sure we're going to be chatting with you before May. So
I really appreciate you all having me on, all and right. I look forward to coming back.
Absolutely. All right, 8:59, hour two, coming up.